I blow it every Sabbath because it's also blown on the Sabbath. And if you've got your shofars at home too, maybe next feast you can bring them all next week and we'll blow together. Make sure you say hallelujah. God loves to hear the shofar. When you study the history of it, it's absolutely amazing. Because we are his sheep, and we are his rams, and compared to the music of heaven, it's pretty primitive compared to the instruments that we have nowadays. But our best instruments are pretty primitive compared to what he's going to give us, the harps of God, and the instruments, the trumpets and on high. And all our voices, even the best singers, are really mediocre compared to what the heavenly choir is and what you will be in the future. Now today is the, what's the date today? Not the sacred date, but the ordinary civil date. What day is it? Second of April, 80 years ago, on the 2nd of April after the World War, the Great War, what they call the Great War, Edward VIII, who was then Prince of Wales, went to a hospital, a private hospital, down somewhere near London, and there was 36 prisoners who were, soldiers who were wounded. And they were in a very, very bad state. And when he went to the hospital to visit them after the war, and they were, you know, really cut up and battered, the nursing staff took him, and he went around and talked to the, the cripples and those who had been wounded to shrapnel and so on, and he was chatting to them, and they indicated that the meeting was over. That's it. He had seen everyone, and he said, "I thought there was 36 prisoners here." He said, "I've only seen 29. So they said, "Well, the others are very, very badly wounded." So the Prince of Wales said, "I want to see these men." So they took him into a side ward where there were 6 men. They were badly, arms off, legs blown off. And, so, you know, they... He went around and looked at each one, absolutely amazed at the wounds they had received in the battlefront. Because in those days, you know, warfare was hand-to-hand practically. And some of the soldiers were in a really bad way when they came back from the front. And then they indicated again that that's it, he'd seen them all, let's finish. And he says, "Hold on, I've just only seen 6. Isn't there one more man?" And they said, "You can't see him. He's so badly wounded, you just cannot. Nobody goes to see him. He can't see, he can't hear, and he can't speak." And Edward said, "I've got to see this man." So they took him into a little side room, which was dark. And the hospital staff was standing there, and they wondered how he would react to him. And there on the bed lay a soldier who was absolutely mutilated. He didn't look like a human being. And Edward looked at him today, 2nd of April, 80 years back, and he went pale. He had never seen a wounded soldier in this condition. And the man was just lying on his bed, unaware that the Prince of Wales was in the room. Couldn't see him, he couldn't hear him, he couldn't speak. And Edward, Prince of Wales, bent down and kissed him on the face. And the man realized. And even though he couldn't understand, the whole staff in the hospital felt that the whole atmosphere of the room had changed. Here was a top personality in the country who was going to be king, kissing this mutilated corpse, practically, a man who was unrecognizable even by his own relatives, a wounded soldier. And I want to think about God's concern for the human race, because we are like those soldiers. And the war of sin has mutilated us, all of us. When the human race was created, Adam and Eve were so beautiful and handsome. I tell you, the most beautiful woman in the world is an ugly witch, a wretch compared to Eve. And all our great good-looking folks are nothing compared to what they were when the battle started. And sin has taken an awful toll on the human race. And Christ, the Prince of the universe, is interested in even the most mutilated soul on this earth. It's not as though he's not interested. He can't hear you, he can't see you, he can't even speak to you. What's the point of going in there? But he's interested. And he'll get to you from the one sense that the Prince of Wales got to. He kissed him and he touched him. Because that's a sense that is always there, no matter how wounded you are. You could feel the touch of a friend, and he felt him kiss him on his face, and he didn't know. Well, today I want to speak. Today is the memorial of creation, of freedom. It's a freedom festival, and freedom is a very, very big thing in the world. And it's freedom from various things. There's first freedom from slavery. Now, a slave is like an animal. It's like a horse or a dog or a bullock, which you don't have to pay wages to, and it's there at your beck and call day and night, 24 hours a day. You could go out there and bring it out of the shed or the cattle shed and make it work till it drops dead. And slaves have no freedom. They can't say, well, that's it. May I finish my work? I can go off and have a weekend off, a couple of weeks holiday. They can't. And at the end of the week, they don't get any wages. And they just get food and a little few scraps of clothing, which their master, depending on how kind he is, will give them. So freedom from slavery is a big thing. And Israel had gone into Egypt. They had kept the Egyptian Empire alive. If it wasn't for Joseph and the God of Israel, the whole of Egypt, the whole population would have died of starvation. In fact, the whole Middle East would have perished of starvation if it wasn't for Israel. But things changed. A new Pharaoh came on the scene. They forgot about all the goodness that Joseph had brought and how that they had kept them alive, and they began to enslave Israel. And this lasted, as you know, for hundreds of years. And then God decided to rescue his people. And the story is so well known that sometimes we tend to think, oh, well, I've heard all this before. But it's vitally important that we not only remember it, but we remember that we are ransomed slaves. So that's one kind of freedom we want from slavery, from servitude. There's also slavery from false teaching. Error and false teaching enslaves entire nations. Millions of people on this earth are enslaved in ignorance, They don't know. They don't know where they've come from. They don't know where this earth came into existence. They don't know what's going to happen when they die. They don't know anything about God or what he's written and isn't. They are completely and totally in ignorance. And it's a form of enslavement. And Christ not only came to save us from the slavery of sin, but he came to save us from the slavery of ignorance. You shall know the truth, and the truth will set your mind free. So that's another form of slavery, ignorance. There's another form of slavery, and that is fear. Right now, at this very moment, there are thousands of people who've lost all their possessions. Their homes have been torched. All their belongings have gone up in smoke. They've lost their identity papers. They've been stolen from them. Their bank accounts in the banks, the computer files have all been deleted. So they can't prove who they are or what their names are. They can't prove they lived in a certain place and this bit of land belonged to them. They can't go to the bank and prove that they had some money because they lost. Their bank books have been taken away and destroyed, and their records have been deleted. They've lost everything, and they're terrified for their lives. Some of their menfolk, they don't know whether they're dead or alive. And this happens all over the world. It's absolutely in the news now about Kosovo and the Balkans. So this is the kind of thing that slavery is. Now, just higher up the ladder of slavery, there's what the Bible calls a bond man or a bond servant. Now, the word slave, believe it or not, only appears twice in the Bible, once in the Old Testament and once in the New Testament. And God says, is Israel a slave? That she's like, implying she's not a slave. My country shouldn't be. My people are not slaves. And that appears once in Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 14, where God says, is Israel a slave that she's being troubled like this? And also in Revelation, where Babylon the Great, we have the souls of men and the slaves enslaved the human race. They never intended to be slaves. The next word that appears is bond man. Now this word appears five times in the Bible, bond man. Now, a bondman, slightly different from a slave, slightly, should I say, different in that he's sold himself and he's a bondman, but at the year of release, he could get his freedom. It says over here various verses, now therefore I pray thee, in Genesis 44, verse 33, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord. This is Judah talking to Joseph. I'll be your bondman. And let the young Benjamin go home. I'll be your bondman. Right? That's the agreement. That's the first time bondman appears. In Deuteronomy 15, verse 15, thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt, and the Lord thy God redeemed thee. Now the word redeemed is to buy back. You go and pay for something, and you buy it back. And slaves were bought and sold. You don't really realize what it is, but they could capture you and sell you in the marketplace. You say, well, I'll have 50 or 60 pounds for this person, and you have no rights at all. You can be worked to death like a horse or an animal could be. But God reminds us that we were bondmen. Thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in Egypt, and the Lord thy God redeemed thee. Right? Therefore I commanded thee to do this thing. So the commandments were, as it were, a thanks to God.
that he redeemed us. I'll read another verse in Deuteronomy 16:12, and thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in Egypt, and thou shalt observe and do these statutes. So we do this because we remember that we were bondmen, we were slaves, we were redeemed. And these festivals that we obey are memorials of redemption. Not like the pagan festivals, which are memorials of fertility. These are memorials of redemption. This is a memorial of the time when Israel was redeemed from Egypt by the blood of the Lamb. All right? It says in the next stage is a bond servant. Now, a bond servant is slightly different. He gets a pay. He gets paid. But he's still under a bond or an agreement. And it says in Leviticus 25, verse 39, and if thy brother that dwelleth by thee be waxen poor and be sold unto thee, thou shalt not compel him to serve as a bond servant. Right? But as a hired servant. So an Israelite was not allowed to make a fellow Israelite his bond servant. You work off a debt or whatever. Right? He had to be a hired servant, so he had to be paid a wage. So here we have bondmen, which are like slaves, and then we have bond servants, which might be working off a debt for a period of time, and then we have hired servants. Right? And Israel was not allowed to have a fellow Israelite as a hired servant. All right? We all know, not many of us have servants over here, mind you, but a servant or a worker in a factory, he gets a wage, and if he doesn't like it, he can just leave. There's no bond, there's no agreement, there's no contract in most cases. If he was under a bond or agreement or a contract to work for so many years, just he'd have to do that. But once that's finished, he's free to go. Now, when God wanted to redeem Israel from Egypt, bear in mind, down below is the little drama, the physical drama we could all see, right? We have a little country called Egypt. We have another little country called Israel or Palestine. We have people over here in Egypt who are slaves. They're called Israelites. And over them is a person called Pharaoh. But above, on next level, we have the world is the slave pen of Egypt. And the Pharaoh is Satan. And the slaves are all of us. So even though you might never have seen Egypt, the fact is, unless you're redeemed, you're in Egypt. And Pharaoh is Satan, and you are a bond slave. You are a slave to Satan and sin. Now, if you want to come out of Egypt, somebody else has to buy you from Pharaoh. And he demands a heavy price. Very heavy. There are certain pleasures in Egypt. You know, there were pleasures like they loved the garlics and the onions and the leeks and the cucumbers. And there are certain pleasures in sin. Let's not delude ourselves that sin is all misery. There are certain kicks. You get kicks in sin. Certain sins will give you a tremendous boost and a kick. You feel great. But at the end of the day, every kick will make you worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And at the end, you will be unrecognizable in your behavior and unrecognizable even in your appearance. Now, for God to buy back these slaves, he has to pay. And the price, we know, was his own blood. Now there are certain stories in the Bible, dramas which Israel had to go through, which explains to them the great truths of salvation. And the first one, as you know very well, is that they take this innocent little lamb. Now if you walk, go around, you know, on our way to the land, the lambs are born, they're all jumping about, little beautiful little things. They're only that size. You take this little lamb and slit its throat. Oh, wow! Have you ever seen a little lamb have its throat slit? Have you never seen that happen, have you? Have you ever seen a bird have its head cut off? Oh, well, I've seen plenty. But I can tell you something. Even the most hardened person has a tinge of killing a little lamb. And the smaller and more innocent the lamb, the harder it is to kill it. And the babies of everything, whether it's a dog or a cat or a bird or a giraffe or even an elephant or a bear or a wolf, or the little babies are always so pretty and nice. They're so cuddly. And everybody likes the little things because they look so nice somehow. I don't know why, but they all look so nice. But killing them is hard work. And Jesus is the lamb. And at the Passover time, he said, you kill this lamb, put its blood in a basin. Wow, collect a lot of blood comes out when you cut its throat. Put the blood in a basin, take a cloth, and put it on the doorpost. And that's up there is this part of the door. That part of the door is the lintel, and these are two posts holding up the lintel. And the angel of death passed over at midnight, and he was only looking for blood. That's all he was looking for. He was not worried about how good the house was or how bad the house was. He was only looking for blood. And if he saw the blood, he passed over. And that's why it's called the Passover, because he's looking for the blood. And he came at midnight. And Moses told Pharaoh, this is the last plague. Watch your step. This is the very last one. We've had all these different miracles, but this one's going to be real bad. Now, if you want to save your lives, you better kill this lamb. They didn't understand fully. Even the Israelites didn't understand. But they went and did it. Kill the lamb. Put the blood on the lamb. They sat and waited. And at midnight, all of a sudden, there was a terrifying scream. Went from house to house. Everybody was screaming. Wherever there was a firstborn son and no blood on the door. If I hadn't put blood, if I was in Egypt and I had no blood on my door, he would die. And he would die. And he would die. And he would die. Can you imagine that? Quite a scary thought. Brian would have been dropped dead too. If I missed anybody, just think about it. Yes, little Ian would have dropped dead. And it was the blood that saved them. But there's another story I want to tell you about, and I want you to turn to it, and we're going to read it, which is an amazing, amazing story, and it's found in Leviticus chapter 14. All right, Leviticus chapter 14. It's not a story that's read very often, but it actually tells the same, it's the same lesson about freedom and salvation by the blood, all right? And this time, it's not a lamb. There's a lamb in the story too, so I'm going to read the whole thing. Chapter 14 of Leviticus, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, this shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. Now, leprosy, as some of you all know, is a disease. It's a nervous disease where you can't feel things. You can't feel the tips of your fingers, and you can't feel. And because you can't feel, you drag your feet along the ground because you can't feel the ground. And the ground just rips your toes off. And you lose your hands and your feet and your fingers and your ears, Lord, because leprosy slowly, slowly eats the whole body. And if you see a leper, it doesn't look like a human being. It looks like a ball of flesh. And some of them are so bad, absolutely twisted out of shape. And leprosy is used as a symbol of sin. And that's what sin has done to the human race. We are all lepers. And though we look in the mirror sometimes and say, wow, don't I look great? I can assure you one thing, you look terrible when you see what you will be and what Adam and Eve looked like. You'll realize how terrible we all look. But this leper, if he was healed, and it happened very seldom, he had to do certain things. And it says here, and the priest shall go forth out of the camp. The fellow had to stay outside. And the priest shall look, and behold, if the plague of leprosy be healed in the leper, then shall the priest command to take for him that is to be cleansed 2 birds. All right? Alive. Clean birds. Can't be a raven. It can't be a hawk. It can't be a, you know, one of these birds of prey. It had to be a clean bird. So it had to be something like a pigeon or a dove. And cedar wood and scarlet and hyssop. And the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. So he had to take this chatty, this earthen vessel, and he takes one bird and he takes its head off inside the chatty. And its blood all squirting out in there. And it's dead. That's the first bird. Then he takes the other bird, which is a turtle dove or a pigeon, and he dips it into the blood in this thing. It's all covered with blood. Let me read it to you. All right? And the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in the earthen vessel over running water. All right? As for the living bird, he shall take it, and the cedar wood, and the scarlet, and the hyssop, and shall dip them, and the living bird, in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water. Wow. And he shall sprinkle upon him, that is to be cleansed from the leprosy, 7 times. So he took it, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, from that first bird's blood. Sprinkled the leper 7 times and pronounce him clean, and then he shall let the living bird loose into the open field. And he that is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, wash himself in water, that he may be clean. And after that he shall come into the camp and shall tarry abroad out of his tent 7 days. Now that's happening to us. The living bird is you and me. And it's the blood of the bird, the blood of the other bird that died, that saved us. That's why we're free. We're outside the camp right now. We haven't entered. But the 7 days or time is going to be up soon. And then we'll enter the kingdom of God. And we'll see the angels. And then we realize what we've been saved from. But the bird that was killed over the running water was Jesus Christ. That's why when he was baptized in the River Jordan over running water, the turtle dove came and settled on him, because he is the dove. And he died. And we are splashed with his blood. And when that bird flew away, it would see blood. It's a hard thing to get off, a stain of blood. That's the story. Now, if you don't have faith, and you decide, oh, this is all nonsense, like Pharaoh thought, rubbish. This guy Moses and his brother Aaron, they've been coming along here spouting all this rubbish. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. And thousands of Egyptians thought this is absolute garbage. These fools. They didn't apply the blood. And the next morning, all the firstborn were dead, from the Pharaoh on the throne to the prisoner in the dungeon. The sons were all dead. And they went around burying their dead, because they have to bury them within a day. So hot there. They realized that we were dealing not with just coincidence, we were dealing with God. And they told the Israelites, go quick. And they gave him 400 years of wages, all in a one-hour. Here's your money. We haven't paid you for 400 years. What do you want? Gold, silver, bracelets? Just leave the country, otherwise we'll all be dead. And Israel went out with a mighty hand today. Isn't that good news? And one day we are going to go out too. We're going to go out. And we're going to be saved because of the blood of the bird, or the blood of the lamb. It's just another way of putting the same lesson across. We have spoken and we sing that song so often, there's power in the blood. We sang it last night. Jesus said in John chapter 6, verse 53, then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. You're a daddy, you're a goner. It's like everybody has AIDS. Unless you take this medicine, you're finished. In the course of time, you'll just, it'll blow up, and your next residence is the graveyard. There is absolutely no escape for those who don't have faith, not at all. We should never forget that fact, that the only way we escape death is by the blood of the lamb or the blood of the turtle dove. Okay, that's the only thing. It's not how good we are, what we know, or you know, intelligent we are. That's got nothing to do with it. When the angel of death went over Egypt, he was not looking at the architecture or the style of the house. He was not even concerned with whether it was an Egyptian house or an Israelite house or somebody else. He didn't bother. He was only looking for one thing, and that was the blood. And that's what the angel of death will be looking for in the near future. Because this is the lintel of your house. You live in this body. And these are your doorposts, which do and hold up and more or less follow your mind. So faith, even though we've said it 1,000 times, and even though we know it, it's vitally important to maintain your faith if you want to live. All right? Now, we've had slaves and bondmen. All right? God has redeemed us by his blood. We've had servants that work for wages, or workers, as Robbie has. If they don't like the job, they can leave, or you can. But then the next stage up, right, is sons and daughters of God. Okay? John chapter 1, verse 12. As many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. Right? Even to them that believe on his name. Now, if you do not believe, it matters nothing what you have or what you think. You cannot become a son or a daughter of God. But if you do believe, he gives you the right from slavery through the servant stage to sonship. That we're going to enjoy for eternity. We can't even understand the full significance of it. But when you look at your own children and your son, you can see the relationship's totally different from a slave or from a friend or from a neighbor or from a workmate. They're part of you. All right? He gave them power. It says, as many as received him, to them he gave power to become the sons of God. Romans 8 verse 14, for as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. Now how you behave, what you say, what you do, God can pick out his sons and daughters. If you're led by the spirit of the world or the spirit of Satan, you are not a son of God. The Jews said, but we are the sons of Abraham. We are the sons. No, you're not. He said, you're the children of the devil. In 1 John chapter 3, verse 1, behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. An inexplicable advantage and a privilege which I cannot begin, or I can't begin to imagine, but I certainly cannot fully fathom or appreciate what it means to be a son of God. But that's what I am, and that's what you are. That's what you are. You're a prince, you're a princess, and you should behave like one. All right? Because the universe is watching. You know, when Princess Diana was here, she couldn't move. Wherever she went, there was the press. Everybody was interested in what she wore, what she did, what she said, where she went. Everything was under close scrutiny. Do you suppose for one second that we aren't under that kind of scrutiny? To be a member of the British royal family is great, but to be a member of the royal family of the God of the universe is infinitely greater. And the paparazzi of the universe are interested in what you do, what you wear, what you say. I tell you, that's no exaggeration. So that's what you are, so be very careful. We are the sons of God. Then it says, beloved, now are we the sons of God. Then the next phrase, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be. In other words, I can't understand, John is saying, we don't know at the moment our next stage. We've come from slavery. We've come from leprosy. We have moved through this bond servant and paid servant stage to the sonship. We are going to move from sonship to another stage. And that stage, to my feeble mind, the more I can think of, is friend of God, companion of God, associate of God, co-worker of God. It's like when your children grow up, they become your friends. They're not a lot of little babies all the time needing. They become your companions. You look forward to their company because now they're adults. And that's what God is looking forward to. Not just little children, which is wonderful, but companions and friends through eternity. God is a very lonely person, you know. He's a very lonely person. In the Old Testament, there was thousands of people. And he could only look at Abraham and said, he's my friend. What about the other millions of them? Didn't have friends. And even though the angels were created in their company, they're not like human race. Because we are the sons and daughters of God, and we're going to grow up to be his friends. So, when you think of freedom, when you think of the festival of freedom, think of what we've been saved from. Slavery of sin, slavery of rejection, slavery of fear. Here's a little poem about slavery. Are you afraid? Are you afraid that amid life's awful strife, its stress and strain, its physical and mental pain, you cannot cope? Are you afraid? Are you afraid that in the world you really roam alone? And all the grind will somehow find you shorn and torn from everything that holds out hope? Are you afraid that greed and gain, with speed insane, is gulping down the good, as though it could, or even should, destroy the earth? Are you afraid? Are you afraid that in this race you're out of place, that you belong not with the strong who throng the track, but with the weak who at the back somehow seek to withdraw from all this silent war? Are you afraid? Are you afraid to breathe your last, or has death cast a darkening shadow on your soul? Are you afraid that sin, without, within, has cheated you in life from getting to your goal? Are you afraid? Marvel of the universe, could I include it in this verse, the remedy for fear? Yes. Have faith in God and fear not, for soon the tangle of life's knot he will undo for you. Then, like a ransomed ship, you'll set out free. Cut loose from the moorings of fear, you'll sail right out to sea. Piloted and full of faith, you'll ride the roaring waves. You'll live above the splashing sound of a world full of slaves, slaves of fear. That's what God does for us. We rise above all this. No matter how bad it gets, no matter how bad the wars get, no matter what we lose, no matter whether our health vanishes, we will ride this storm. We are going to be friends of God for eternity. How do we know? Because we are like that free bird. Right. We are not a bird in a cage. We've been bought and the cage has been opened and we can fly. A man once went to a zoo and he saw a great big eagle in a cage. And he said, "What's this eagle doing in this cage?" He said, "Oh, look how beautiful it is." He said, "Let me buy it." And he bought this bird. And he opened the cage, and the eagle took off. He says, "Now look at the eagle." When it soared into the sky, you were like that eagle. But before Christ, you were in the cage of sin and slavery. And he has set us free by his blood. Amen.